Hi there, I'm Anne-Marie McQueen, editor of Live Healthy, and this is the Live Healthy podcast. Each week we interview health and wellness leaders and talk about all the things that are good for you, which you can also read about in our online magazine, the only one of its kind for men and women in the UAE. And now, here's this week's guest.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Anne. Thanks for having me.
How did you get into talking about all of this stuff? Like, you're a nutrition expert, you're a diabetic educator, you're in Dubai and Mumbai. But what drew you to this? Like, what drew you to this topic?
Oh, wow. So you mean this topic in the sense endometriosis?
Are we talking you had endometriosis?
Yeah. So I had endometriosis, and this is so interesting because I've been studying nutrition forever and then practicing. I think it's been 13 years now. But when I found out I had endometriosis, I was already practicing as a nutritionist. But I realized that I think to a great extent, I landed up with endometriosis because of the stuff that I had studied and I was practicing. Conventional nutrition is, I realized after endometriosis that it just doesn't work for me. It does works for other people, but it just didn't work for me. I think that's one of the reasons I landed up with endometriosis. And that's why I talk so much about it, because I feel there's so many myths around it about how you should be eating. In fact, endometriosis goes undiagnosed for 8 years. Most often it's misdiagnosed. I don't know if you know about this, but it's a really painful condition. And most often women are told that it's just in their head, because every time you get your period, the pain is so excruciating. A lot of doctors say that it's actually like contractions, like actual delivery contractions. But we are told as kids that it's normal. And I think it's, you know, period pain is not normal. I mean, it's common, but it's not normal at all. You're supposed to have your period. It's supposed to be smooth. Yes, there's going to be mild cramping, but it's supposed to be smooth. But because endometriosis is so difficult to diagnose, it goes misdiagnosed or undiagnosed in most cases. So for me, I talk so much about it because it was a turning point in my career, in what I learn, in what I practice and preach. So that's why endometriosis has now become like the central thing that I talk a lot about. But it's also a lot to do with PCOS, and I do a lot of work with hormones and women.
Okay. So when we talk about endometriosis, you said you think that the conventional diet might have been the cause. So when you drilled down into your own endometriosis, what did you find and how did you heal?
So, you know, they talk about how whole grains are the way to go and dairy is rich in calcium and all of these myths around just foods which are actually highly inflammatory.
Yeah.
I had to and of course this was for way too long. I think for 8 years, which is by my standards now a bit too long. I stretched it, but for 8 years I had to go paleo. Now the problem with endometriosis is that it's recurring. And I was told back then, this was almost 11 years ago, that conception is the only cure, which is the big myth. Because a lot of women who also, you know, conceive and have babies, even they get endometriosis later on. So it's not true that conception is the only cure. That's a misconception. And I mean, there are so many reasons why this happens. And again, it's very unknown because a lot of times people call it autoimmune. They still think whether it's autoimmune or genetic or inflammatory, nobody knows. But what I had to really do was sit and understand why it happened. And when I started digging deep and understanding what endometriosis really does to your body and why it happens, I realized it was a lot to do with my IBS. As a child, I had IBS. There are three types. There's IBS-C, which is constipation, IBS-D, which is diarrhea, and then there's IBS-M. I had constipation, so it was IBS-C. And that, when you're constipated, we think that when we go to the bathroom, all we do is eliminate food, but we do eliminate a lot of extra hormones as well that our body doesn't need. Now, when someone is constipated, they're not eliminating estrogen properly, the one that's used up. So it recirculates back in your body, and you have something called as estrogen dominance. Now, if something like IBS gets nipped in the bud and gets sorted out at that, you know, particular time, then you don't land up living for so many years with estrogen dominance and probably don't land up with endometriosis either. Again, endometriosis could be a genetic condition, it could be inflammatory, it could be all of these things. But I feel my IBS had a role to play. And the reason I had IBS was because I was eating gluten, dairy, lentils, because it's part of our culture as well. This is just the way we eat, right? And this is what we are taught as well at university. You're supposed to eat whole grains and you should be getting dairy for your calcium levels and all of that stuff. So I had to literally unlearn everything I knew and eat a whole different way. And paleo is, are you familiar with the paleo diet?
Yep. Yep.
But I had to go paleo for too long, almost 8 years, because I was just scared to get it back again. And now it's been 13 years. Honestly, I'm free of endometriosis. I have cysts, which are, you know, 1 centimeter, 1.2 centimeters. That's nothing, you know. So the fact that I've been able to avoid it for so long, I think I give a lot of credit to what I did with my food and lifestyle. And a very important thing is a lot of emotional cleansing. A lot of inner work went to it as well. Because so my gynec, who told me that I had it, who diagnosed it, the first thing she asked me was, are you a type A personality? And at that time, I felt it meant nothing. But now I realized, and that's also because of the clients I speak with, 95% of them and who have endometriosis are type A personalities. We right. love perfection. We're always chasing that perfect mental vision of ourselves. We're not very compassionate with ourselves. And all of that is so necessary to solve if you're trying to solve any condition that's happened to your body. Because I genuinely believe our body is literally, it's a representation of our thoughts and feelings and emotions. It's the effect of it, not the cause, you know?
Yes.
And generally go the other way around. So I think a lot of that as well, a lot of mindfulness rituals, a lot of emotional cleansing and inner work just to get out of that whole zone.
Can you just walk me through like the mechanism as you understand it for why you were eating foods that were, you weren't digesting properly, then that leads to the growth, because endometriosis is the growth of the lining of the uterus, the endometrium on the outside. So it's like somehow it makes a leap. It leaps through the barrier and starts growing on the outside. And in a healthy person, this, like, obviously this shouldn't happen. It's not designed to happen, but can you just tell me like your understanding of how the poor digestion, constipation, or say diarrhea, whatever you have, causes that to grow in the way you understand it, and then how the emotional stuff, like, I just want to understand the links, you know?
Of course. So I'll tell you the main thing when it comes to your gut, right? And I think it's not just endometriosis. It's true for so many other things, PCOS as well. It's inflammation. If your gut, so do you know where the gut, when I say gut, what comes to your mind? Where do you think the gut is?
Yeah, I just think of a large pouch in my stomach. I know that it's not, but that's what I think.
Everybody says this, right? But the thing is, our gut lining, and this, we might deviate a little, but this is so interesting. Our gut lining starts from our nostrils and goes right into our body and ends at the anus. And our gut lining, and if I take one strand of my hair and I chop it into half, that's how thin it is. Now, this gut lining is supposed to protect me from everything outside, and it's supposed to help with absorption of all the nutrition. The more thick the tight junctions are in the gut lining, the better it is for all of us, because we can stay protected from the pathogens, bacteria, et cetera, et cetera. Now, imagine when you have IBS, and so many people have IBS now because of so many different reasons, but it could even be because of stress, because of antibiotics, because of, you know, getting COVID, so many different reasons, right? When your gut lining starts becoming, have you heard of leaky gut?
Yeah.
Yeah. Leaky gut is, just putting it in layman terms, when there are holes in the gut, when the villi start to separate because of whatever reasons. And when there are holes in your leaky, in your gut, that's what we call leaky gut. And that's when you also have IBS and stuff. A lot of things which are not supposed to enter our bloodstream enter through this hole. And that's what causes inflammation. That's what causes an autoimmune response. Because your B cells and your T cells, which are your warriors, don't know how to deal with all of this stuff. They don't know how to deal with these new pathogens and things that are not supposed to enter the bloodstream. So that's when we have inflammation. Now, when there is low-grade inflammation, which means inflammation for a long time, I was eating gluten, dairy, thinking it's healthy, right? I was eating whole grains, starting my morning with a bowl of cereal and oats and things like that, because it's supposed to be healthy. Now, because of that, because it's happened for so long and my IBS went misdiagnosed, not treated, whatever, eventually, because of the inflammation, all of these things started to happen. You have this, by the way, it's not exclusive just to pelvic region. The endometrial lining, which is like basically a tissue of the uterus that can grow anywhere. It can grow in your lungs, in your nose, anywhere.
Wow, okay.
And it is really painful and or it leads to infertility. So sometimes only when women are trying to conceive and they're just not getting pregnant, that's when they realize they have had silent endometriosis, you know?
Okay.
So I think a lot of it is due with inflammation. And when it comes to processing emotions, like we spoke about how emotions, you know, replicate or not replicate, but how emotions manifest in our body. You know, there's the, I can't remember her name, Dr. Holly Harris. So she is the one who led this study where she's shown such a strong correlation between women who were sexually abused and the ones who land up with endometriosis. The women who are sexually abused, they have a 79% higher risk of developing endometriosis than the ones who have. This is a very strong correlation, you know, and this could happen because this is what she talks about in our study. Certain pain pathways get activated as children, you know, when this happens and you don't know how to process emotions, right? As kids, we don't know how to process it. So this energy literally gets stuck. And these pain pathways get stuck, and then that's how they manifest in our body in different ways. And again, this is not exclusive just to endometriosis. It could be many other conditions, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you add in the circulating estrogen piece.
Yeah.
Then I guess, like, I'm wondering how all the things that grow where they're not supposed to grow, because I had fibroids that I had removed and now they're back, like they've reappeared, like, and you know, they're starting again. And I'm like, and thyroid nodules and things on your adrenal gland and peak cysts in your ovaries, these things are growing. And it's like, it's multifactorial. It's multifactorial, right? Okay. But this is why everyone's so confused.
Of course. But there's a lot to do with your microbiome as well.
Okay.
We have 1 trillion. Humans are not simply humans. There's 1 trillion bacteria, which we call as a microbiome. And we are in a complete ecosystem. So the human cells and your microbiome are communicating with each other. It's a symbiotic relationship. So when we are eating foods like this, and we're eating foods that are inflammatory, we are literally feeding our bad bacteria. And there's dysbiosis. So when we have extra growth of things that we don't really want, even when it's cancerous or just, you know, all the stuff that you spoke about as well, fibroids, adenomyosis, PCOS. What's happening is that we are feeding more of the bad microbiota and not that much of the good one. Our microbiome has 300 times more genes compared to what our human genome expresses. So based on what we eat, based on the type of bacteria that feed on it, we actually decide what our health is going to be like. Right. So a lot of this is also got to, and you know what? We've actually tested the period blood of a woman who has endometriosis versus someone who doesn't. And she has a very different set of microbiome compared to the ones who don't have endometriosis. So it's a lot to do, comes down to microbiome as well.
Wow.
And then of course, there's genetics. Yeah. But okay. Genetics play as well. Yeah.
Well, genetics are interesting because a lot, you know, you can have the genes for almost anything and not get it if you live a certain way, right? Or you've have certain risk factors. So
yeah, epigenetics proves that, right? It's 20% genes, 80% environmental triggers. We know.
Yeah, but then I think the medical side, do you find the medical side sort of torques up the genetic predisposition to something, because that I think will create some fear, right? And if you don't know how in control you are of it, then you'll be more inclined to take medication, I would think.
I mean, have you heard of, I can't remember the doctor's name now, recently who spoke about how obesity is 50 to 95% higher risk of people who have, it's all genetic. She just spoke about it. And I can't remember now, she's also part of the USDA committee. And there's so much stuff going on Instagram about it. I can't really remember. I haven't really paid attention. But yeah, there are still doctors who talk about it. They say that it's all about, and that's what kind of takes away the power from us. I feel like I love this whole 80-20 rule. where 20% is genetics, 80% is up to us, because at least we have, and we do have control, because we decide which microbiome is growing, right? We get to choose that.
I think the moral of the story is, and this, when you go to your doctor and say you're complaining about bile problems, because I always had IBS as well. And I mean, I would ask so many times, they'd be like, well, you've got IBS, you know, well, it's only in since Abu Dhabi in the last year that I found a doctor who was like actually looked into it for me and is actually helping me fix it. And the moral of the story is like, don't live like that, because you're damaging yourself with each year that goes by that you're not digesting your food properly. And it just makes sense. Like if you're not digesting and using the nutrients from your food and these problems are happening, of course there's going to be a payback.
But then again, it comes down to the gut, because a lot of people who are taking all these supplements, doing all of these things, but if your gut is what is absorbing everything, right?
Yeah.
You can be on the best diet, but if your gut is not in the best place to absorb the stuff, what use are those, you know, those expensive supplements and all the other things that we do? So I think taking care of your gut is central here.
Okay. And like a lot of people think that means like spending money on things, but what are some actionable things people can do right now to just sort of start to try and repair their gut? Step one and two and three or something like that.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, because again, it's important to make it actionable, right? Because these things just sound so fluff, but like coming down to what you can actually do, what I tell my clients to do, get up in the morning and start your day with fat. Have a teaspoon of ghee, butter, coconut oil, anything, Brazil nuts for those who are struggling with thyroid or because of the selenium content and all of that. So start your day with fat, because that actually lines your gut, also helps in absorption of vitamin A, D, E, K, all these fat soluble vitamins.
Okay.
So starting with a teaspoon of fat, in my opinion, is textbook for anyone struggling with gut issues. The other thing is, of course, again, I don't want to say everybody needs to cut off gluten, dairy, sugar, but it's worth a try. You know, so I started this a year ago where we do this gut cleanse program, 15 days, because it's easy for people to commit for 15 days. But that's, I tell everybody, that could just be the beginning of your health journey, you know. But 15 days of eliminating gluten, dairy, sugar, lentils, soy, peanuts. If these six things you can eliminate for 15 to 20 days, start observing how your body is feeling, make connections between what you're eating, how you're feeling, how your poop feels, not feels, looks, is so important. How your sweat smells, is your breath smelling? You know, these things tell you about that microbiome that we spoke about, how much of it is good, how much of it is bad. So anyway, coming back to actionable stuff, removing these six ingredients just for 15 days to see, are you feeling better? Are your symptoms getting better? And then of course, reintroducing them. And again, you have to be really mindful while you're doing this, because you'll know your threshold. You'll know how much gluten you can tolerate or whether you can tolerate it or not, you know?
Right. Okay.
So, the first thing would be starting your day off with a good source of fat. I think we know canola, safola, vegetable oils are gone. They have way too much omega-6. They don't serve us. We know this already. The second thing would be removing all these inflammatory foods for a while and then reintroducing them gradually and seeing what's working. And I think third thing would be, you know, keeping the 80-20 rule when it comes to processed foods. Because no matter how healthy, so many FMCG products out there, no matter how healthy they say they are in the front, when you turn it around and you read the ingredients, it's sad. It's just sad. Yeah.
Okay. Those are very, very good tips. Those are very doable things to do. I know if your diet's a certain way, that's going to seem like a lot, but 15 days is like, that's nothing. Yeah. Okay. I want to talk to you about blood sugar, because in addition to all these things that are growing on our bodies, pre-diabetes, insulin resistance it's a problem for so many people, especially post-COVID, because a lot of people were just very sedentary. But it's enough to make you start to develop some sort of eating issue. Like I know I'm really freaked out right now, because I'm a certain age and half of us have insulin resistance, and you see things on social media. Like if you feel tired after you eat, you're insulin resistance. And if you do that, like, you know, how do you sort of navigate this? Cause I know I'm like developing whatever an eating disorder is about insulin resistance. I feel like I'm developing it. I'm like, like it's scary because I have to pay attention to the space a lot. But where are we at? Is it as bad as we think? And what can people do to just improve their body's ability to function in this way.
And you're specifically talking about insulin resistance here.
Yeah. Right? And the tendency that, you know, so many people are walking around at pre-diabetic and don't know it. And they're like walking time bombs. And I mean, this is true, but yeah.
You know, can I give you a very simple answer to this, which the simplest answer is calculate. So 2 days, put it in MyFitnessPal or any other app and just calculate how many carbs are you consuming. I love dividing carbs into active carbs and slow carbs. And I've noticed there are times in a lot of women's lives when so much shifts, right? So at some time, there are some phases, in fact, even during our menstrual cycle, we can do this, but that's a whole different conversation. But there are times we need to go slow carb. Your active carbs are things like bread, rice, potato, you know, all of those things. And the slow carbs, of course, are all these vegetables, right? I would put sweet potato in slow carbs. I could put pumpkin in slow carbs. And eating that way, like going by slow carbs, is one of the best ways to hack your blood sugar levels. Okay. So again, actionable things would be number one, start your day with fat first. I know a lot of women who start, a lot of us start with fruit, you know? And I feel that is not the best thing if you're already struggling with insulin resistance.
Right.
We know hacking blood sugar levels is one of the best things we can do, right? We age slowly. There could be weight loss as well if you're keeping your blood sugar levels stable. And your mood is a lot better. All these three things get better when your blood sugar levels are stable. So number one, starting your day with fat first. Number two, breakfast. Now, I know a lot of people skip it and that's fine, each to its own. But if you are going to have breakfast, then it should be high protein and high fat. Let's do a savory breakfast rather than, again, a carb-rich breakfast. Let your carbs come in for lunch because that's when your digestive fire is the highest. That's when you can digest it better. It just literally, when it comes to blood sugar levels, it comes down to carbs. Now, there are some clients who I've noticed are still not doing better, even though they go slow on carbs. They need some form of, I wouldn't say metformin or glucophage. I think that is last, like it should not be first line of action. There are so many beautiful supplements now. If you take the right omega-3, and when I say the right omega-3, I mean, do you take omega-3?
Well, I was taking omega-3 religiously for most of, I'd say since I was 30, but I recently have found out that I had a fatty liver and I'm a little concerned about polyunsaturated fatty acids. And yeah. I just stopped taking the omega-3 because I don't eat a ton of inflammatory sixes. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to try to. So I'm curious what you have to say about that. Because I got a little bit like eek about omega-3s, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I know that they can be not great. Like they degrade quickly and that you have to be careful. So maybe it's good to talk about that.
No, so it depends on the form you're buying, right? Yeah. Now, it's important that you turn it around and you check the EPA and DHA. Yep. That should be above 500.
Yep.
It's omega-3 is amazing, but if you have family history of cardiovascular disorders, you're better off taking just 1,000 mg, not 2,000. Oh. 2,000 used to be what everyone used to recommend, but now we know 1,000 mg is good enough, especially for people struggling with cardiovascular disorders. So that's number one. So omega-3 can really help. It is one of the most anti-inflammatory things. It will really help bring down the inflammation over time. Every cell of our body has an outer layer of phospholipids. And within 3 months of you taking the right omega-3, that changes. So after 3 months, not be so sensitive to it. You will be more sensitive to insulin, you know? So omega-3 is one. Berberine. Have you heard of berberine,
yep.
The supplement?
Yep.
I feel this is a game changer for anyone who's pre-diabetic and anyone who's diabetic with an HbA1c of 8 or less. I don't even think they need to go on metformin. You know, taking the right amount of berberine and managing your carbohydrates properly could do the trick because it activates AMPK pathways. It activates glycolysis, which is the rate at which your body can actually convert, glucose to energy. It does all of these beautiful things, just like metformin. So you can use berberine, and then there's another one. I mean, this is for women, of course, who are struggling with PCOS or people, you know, like how you said you're struggling with fibroids and stuff. Overcure.
What's it called? Sorry.
Overcure. OVACURE. Overcure. A lot of women with PCOS, we recommend this because have you heard of myo-inositol?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So Overcure is better because it has a great, again, with supplements, it's about the efficiency of what that supplement is going to do and the amount of ingredients in it. So When it comes to overcure, there's a ratio of 40:1 of myo-inositol versus D-chiro. That ratio is really important because, again, there's a lot of scientific evidence on how that can actually reverse insulin sensitivity. So I tend to use these kind of things with my clients rather than, you know, getting them onto metformin.
Yeah.
It's amazing what can happen in 3 months of doing these things. Sorry, I'm cutting you off. But none of these will work if your diet is not okay. If you are going to be chronically, like you're going to be overeating all the time, then it's a problem. If you're not sleeping well, that is another thing that reflects on your blood sugar levels the next day, you know?
Okay. So slow carbs, which is really just non-processed vegetable.
A lot of vegetables. Yes. Carrots, sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
Things like that. And even if you're doing active carbs, like I'd say this a lot on Instagram, even if you're having your rice, let the proportion of your active carb to the veggies be 1:2.
Yeah,
so okay. I'm going to have 100 grams of rice. 100 grams of rice is good enough generally, even for diabetics. 100 grams or at least 200 grams of vegetables. That will slow the release into the bloodstream, right? So I won't get that spike, which we're all dreading.
Yeah. What do you think about all this monitoring, like all this Ultrahuman and Lumen and... everyone's continuous glucose monitoring and everyone's obsessively monitoring themselves. What do you think? Do we need it?
So again, I think it can either create awareness or obsession. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to know the type of person you are before you jump into these things. It's a lot like the weighing scale and MyFitnessPal, you know. I genuinely believe the way we eat is the way we live our lives. And it is the psychology behind it. If you are constantly going to be fearful. So I put a CGM as well because I just wanted to see. And I 1 month and I was out of it. Because I am, my nature generally, I am an extremist. I understand this about myself. So I know that if I'm going to constantly have it, I'm just going to be every 2 hours, I would be monitoring it, you know. The good thing was that I realized, even though I'm having my fat first, I'm doing a protein and fat rich breakfast, I'm doing my ratios correct, there would be times it would go up, and that was generally stress related. And if I had not slept well at night. So give me a lot of good cues about what was really going on in my body. But within a month, I got off it because I think our body is constantly communicating with us. It's constantly telling us, and we've lost that connection, you know, sadly.
Yeah.
So you can use this for awareness, but it depends on the person using it. It comes down to that. We have a cervical mucus, for God's sake, to track our ovulation, you know, which is an inbuilt ovulation tracker. But we use kits. And I feel like the more we connect back to our body, the more we tap into that body wisdom, the better it is. We just spoke about microbiome, right? You come to know if you have dysbiosis, the way your sweat smells, the way your breath smells, the way your poop looks.
Yeah.
All of these things give you such a good insight. So again, I would take it with a pinch of salt, and I am not a big fan of calorie counting, checking my weight. My clothes always tell me of tracking my sleep. I wake up in the morning. I know how I'm feeling, right? I know how my sleep was, but no, I'm going to use a Aura ring or I don't know what not to tell me that. I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I get data cells. Data cells.
Sorry. I've written about this, you know, like I'm not either. And when I dibble dabble, cause it's confusing, right? And then you think, oh, this is here. Maybe I should use it. And then I'll interview someone who says, no, it's great. It's great. So I'll try it. And then again, I have the tendencies that you do. I'll just become very perfectionist about it. And I'll start feeling bad and I'll get down on myself if things aren't like perfect. But also, I worry about everyone running around, like not paying any attention to their body and just collecting all this data. And then I just worry about having it on you. I just worry about having a watch on you that's flashing and communicating. And I don't know, like, it's just,
I think it's a complete disconnect with our actual, 50 years ago, we didn't need this stuff, right? We just didn't need it. And we were the healthiest then. Of course, it has a lot. It's a very layman statement to make. There's a lot because the way our food is processed now has changed. So much has changed. Role reversals have happened. Like, God knows what not, right? There's so much going on that the way our bodies respond to stress has changed as well. So, but I think one of the things that we're doing wrong is overthinking and overdoing. And I think with CGMs and all of these extra things that we're adding to our lives, it gets really stressful, right? Because we're just constantly overthinking everything.
So your advice would be to people who are struggling with PCOS and endometriosis, your very simple nutrition advice, but also psychologically, what would you want people to do?
I mean, specifically for endometriosis and PCOS, number one, for them, it would definitely be eat more fat, because your sex hormones are off and your sex hormones are steroid hormones. They are made from fat. So you need to eat enough fats, you know, stop going low on fat. That's number one. Secondly, as far as emotions go, I think everybody needs an emotional cleanse, whether it's a therapist who you're going and verbally vomiting everything out to, whether it's a morning ritual that you adopt that keeps you calm, whether it's earthing or grounding, you know, walking barefoot on grass, things like that really help us stay in the rest and relax mode. So our autonomic nervous system can either be in the rest and relax or fight flight. It can't be in both at the same time. The more we are in rest and relax, the more healing happens. We can't heal in fight flight. And with all of the things that we keep doing, all of the excess stuff that we're talking about, it keeps us in fight flight, right? So yes, it gives you all this data and you can come to know about so many different things, but where's the healing happening? So I think, that's where the emotional cleanse comes in the picture. Eating more fat, monitoring carbs. I think that is very important. Yeah. Understanding where your carb sources are, where are they coming from, and how much of it you're consuming. These would be my top three.
What advice, because social media is just, it's crazy. Like I have to be on there for multiple reasons, but I get so confused and I have 20, however many years of writing about this stuff. What's your advice for people when they're going on social media, trying to find some answers, who to follow, how do you protect yourself?
Wow. You know what I do is I keep a limit of 45 minutes and I literally do my business and jump off. But that's again, because it's a lot like you, I'm just doing, you know, that there's a lot of stuff that I do there. So I have to be on it. For the others, I'd say that you have to know that you know you. Nobody else can know you as well as you know you. So yeah, you have to try stuff out, but ultimately you'll have to go by what really works for you and what really resonates with you rather than just doing so much at one go. So pick up a habit that feels sensible, that is not short-term and quick, that is not over-promising. There are so many people out there over-promising things. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Lose 5 kgs in 5 weeks. Yes, but they don't tell you that you'll also lose your hair by the end of it. And you probably develop very low T3 levels, which will give you thyroid.
Yeah.
You know, so it has to be very realistic. And again, I always tell people tap into your body wisdom, you know, do that rather than just accumulating more and more and more information from social media.
That's great, Rashi. Thank you so much. So where can people find you and work with you?
So I have, my Instagram handle is Rashi Chaudhary. And my website is rashichaudhary.com. It's R with a double A. That's where they can find me.
Oh, with a double A. I missed the double A. Thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Fine. On Instagram, it's a single A, but my website is double A. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
That's it for this week. If you liked the podcast, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. We'll see you next time on the Live Healthy Podcast.